Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So this afternoon we will read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we will read from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, titled Knowledge of the Absolute. And we will read verse 7. Mata paracharam nanyat, kinchidasti dananjaya, mayi sarvam idam brahmam, sutre mani ganaimha. Translation. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung on a thread. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person, that the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth, is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Shvetashvata Upanishad, chapter 3, verse 10. Tato yad utalataram tad arupa manamayam ya etad vidur amritas te bhavantia te tere dukam evapiyanti. Which means, in the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental. But those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupa. But this arupa is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shvetashvata Upanishad chapter 3, verse 8 and 9, substantiate this as follows. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam adichabharanam tamasaparas tat tam eva vidvan atimrityam eti nan yapatam vidyate yanaya. Yes, naparam naparam asti kinchid. Yes, man naniyo naujyayo asti kinchid. Vriksha iva sabdo divitishtatyekas. Te nedam oranam purushena sarvani. Which means, I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness. Only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person, because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest, and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree, and he illumines the transcendental sky. And as a tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. Let me read the verse again. Mata parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai saravamidam protam sutre mani gada iva. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me, as pearls are strung on a thread. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's very nice to be here with you all in the Sabha Hall here in Bombay Road. I first did a program here in this hall in 1980, some time ago. I think some of you were in your previous lifetimes in 1980. But we were here and we did a Krishnastami program right here. And many times in the temple room just through the double doors over there, we did our weekly services here so many times. So I have fond memories of this place. And here we've read a verse spoken by Lord Krishna, and it is timeless. Bhagavad Gita is timeless. It is not just something which is relevant to either some people or at some time. It is eternal. And anyone who is exposed to this transcendental knowledge, spiritual sound vibration, It will bring out, it will start to bring out their dormant God consciousness that is there within the heart of every living being. Lord Chaitanya, he said, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kalu Noi. That the eternal perfection of love for God is within the heart of every living being. Not just some thousands of years ago when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. Then it was relevant. Or just in India. Or just to Indian people. These considerations are factually irrelevant. Of course, some circumstances may be more conducive than others. Now, these days, we know times, materially times is very difficult. This is Kali Yuga. Perhaps, I'm sure some of you have heard this term, Kali Yuga. This is the age of Kali. Not Kali, but Kali. And it's a very degraded age. Right now, Payusha, Sabya, Kalavasmin Yuhajana, Manda Sumanda Matayo, Manda Bhagya Shupakita. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Srimad Bhagavatam is another of the Vedic literatures. It is a corollary of Bhagavad Gita which we're reading from. So Srimad Bhagavatam says that in this iron age of Kali, people are short-lived. They're quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. These are the fundamental characteristics of the age of Kali, this period we're in now. In fact, literally the word Kali means quarrel. And I think we see a lot of that around us. We do not want to get political, but this week, in the political circles, things have been getting a little turbulent, haven't they? A whole lot of the comrades decided they were not really comrades. And they started fighting or at least arguing with each other. And who knows where it will lead. This is the age of Kali. The age of quarrel and hypocrisy. I was flying from Johannesburg to Durban on Tuesday. And they handed out the Star newspaper, and there was some article comparing the two sides. We will not mention any names, but you know better than me. And the writer raised the question, or the point. He said, it is not a question of whether one is corrupt and the other is not. He said, it is just a question of whether this one is more corrupt or that one. So again, we don't want to get any more political than we have already, but this is Kali Yuga. It's a very degraded age. They're meant to be our leaders. If the leaders are like that, what hope do the followers have? It is a recipe for a sad story to develop. But here is Lord Krishna speaking. We chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Hari Ram. Some people question, what should be chanted first, Hari Rama, that part, or Hari Krishna? But frankly, that is also irrelevant. Because once you start chanting, then it's just a continuum. And nothing is really first, nothing is really last. And Krishna and Ram, they are the same. They are the same person, appearing in slightly different forms, with slightly different pastimes, and displaying slightly different qualities. But we all know, at least all of you adults know, that the kingdom of Lord Ram, when Lord Ram was ruling this world, he was an ideal leader. We were reading just very recently that Lord Ram, he treated the subjects as his children. And he conducted himself like a perfect father. And he cared, and he took care to see that all these subjects were comfortable, happy, provided for as much as possible. In those days, they did not have industry like we have. Everything now is made in China because the labor is cheap. The workers haven't woken up there yet. But don't worry, they will. And they'll start charging more for their work. But right now, labor is cheap in China. So everything is coming from there. So many things are coming from there. But generally, it is all plastic. When we see a picture of Lord Krishna or Lord Ram, sometimes we see pictures of Krishna as a child. Sometimes we see pictures of Lord Ram as a child. And of course, there are so many descriptions in Mahabharata about Krishna, in Ramayana about Lord Ram. So many descriptions are there. So those pictures are just depicting what is there in the descriptions. And you see little Krishna or little Ram, that around their neck they have necklaces, earrings, and some bangles perhaps, and things like this. On their ankles they have little ankle bells. And these things are not plastic from Shanghai. These are all solid gold. Solid gold with gems. And this is a child, preschool child. So what do the parents wear? What does the mother wear? You can be sure that is really something quite impressive. But nowadays, in the name of everybody getting ahead, now everything is made of plastic and everyone has to work very hard. When I was young, the women, my mother, never worked. And my friends, their mothers never worked. But now, the general practices, at least in so many cases, I don't know the figures, but husband and wife are working. Who is looking after the child, the maid? So this is coming again. Things are not so nice. But in the Ram Raji, the rule of Lord Ram, in Srimad Bhagavatam there's very amazing description In fact, it sounds a little fantastic that at that time, when Lord Ram was ruling, then disease was unknown. Lamentation was unknown. Anxiety, distress, all these things were unknown for two reasons. Basic reasons. First is, everyone was God conscious. Everyone was aware of God, of their relationship with God. And everyone was practically engaged in those relationships. Not just intellectually some idea, not just in a ceremonial sense that every Tuesday we fast, or, you know, sometimes we go to the temple. Not just in a ritualistic sense, but their whole lives were focused on the Lord. And because the Lord was in the center of their lives, therefore their lives were very happy. Here at the Purport, of course I know it was somewhat technical, but perhaps you picked up, Srila Prabhupada explained that the absolute truth, God, the source of everything, Krishna, Ram, is a person, not a thing. And his natural qualities are three: eternity, full knowledge, and bliss. That is his nature, the nature of God. So if we are connected with him, then we also become surcharged with eternity, knowledge, and bliss by connection with him. Simple example: if you put your finger in the electrical socket and switch it on, you will become surcharged by your connection with it. If you put your hand in a fire, your hand becomes hot. If you stand in the middle of winter here in Peterborough, it gets cold. So if you go outside in the middle of winter, in the middle of the cold, you get cold because you're in contact with it, with that. Actually, our bodies normally are warm. But you stand outside in the cold, and then through contact with the cold, you become cold. So it depends what we have contact with. And the idea in this case is to have contact with God. And then you become godly. Not that you become God. This is a rather foolish idea that we can become God. If you were God, do you think you would do a very good job? You know, I'm sure some of you, some of us, could not run this country. Maybe none of us here could run this country. I don't know if there's anyone living who could run this country nicely. So what about running everything? Not just even this planet, but the totality of existence. So this idea that we are God, this is a rather foolish idea. Some say we are all God, but we have forgotten. Now we just have to remember, and then everything will be okay, because we will have understood again that we are God. But if we are God, how is it that we have forgotten? And even though sometimes we try to remember, we cannot. How is that? We are in illusion in this world. So, if we are God, but now we are in illusion, it means the illusion is more powerful than God. This does not make sense. Like here also, Prabhupada, our spiritual master in the third, what he mentions, the idea that some people think that God is not a person. He is impersonal, like a light, or some energy, or whatever. Something which is not a person. But this is also not a very good idea. In very simple terms, we are all human beings. Many of us here have children. When human beings get together to reproduce, what do they produce? They produce more human beings. We do not see that some husband and wife in Peterborough, they got together and they produced a dog. But the dogs, when they get together, they produce dogs. We produce humans every time. It is not even one in a million that human parents produce, like a cow or a horse or something like that. So, the absolute truth, God, He is the source of everything. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aham Bija Prada Pita. Pita in Sanskrit means father. Father, like Bapu, is a sort of, degraded form of the original Sanskrit, Pita. Aham Bija Prada Pita, Krishna says. I am the seed-giving father of every living entity, all living entities. So, we have come from God, ultimately at least. And we are persons. So, that means God must be a person and not a thing. If God was just a thing, how can a thing produce persons? We have never seen it. We have never heard of it. So like this in the perfection of our senses, this idea that God is impersonal, the absolute truth is impersonal, is also not a very good idea. So when Lord Ram was here, there was the Ram Raja. Everyone was God conscious. As a result, because they were God conscious, then, because they were in contact with God, focused on God, then their lives were surcharged with the potency of God. Just as your body becomes surcharged with the electrical potency if you put your finger in the electrical socket. So this is one point. The other point, why things were so happy, everyone was so happy in the Ram Raja, was because he was there and he was giving his mercy. Because he was there and he was giving his mercy, therefore, and everyone was focused on him, therefore everything in all respects was completely auspicious and completely wonderful. So here we are now, later, in Kali Yuga, and as we all know, life is sometimes difficult. I will not ask if any of you sitting here in the hall today have been hijacked or held up in the last year or two, but I know it's possible. And I remember walking into one shop in the nation a couple of years ago, little hardware shop. Walking in, and the people there, a couple of people behind the counters, they were like devastated. They were in a state of shock. We walked in and they just were practically not interested. So we asked them, what happened? What's wrong? And they said they were held up 2 minutes before. Somehow by Krishna's mercy, we walked in afterwards. And none of them were hurt, so that's not too bad at least. But this is Kali Yuga. As we said, we quoted that verse. In this iron age of Kali, people are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, and above all, always disturbed. Like misguided, we mentioned these ideas about God. So there's so many misconceptions. Even some people try to read Bhagavad Gita without proper guidance. And they come out at the end of Bhagavad Gita with all sorts of ideas. And I've asked many people, you read Bhagavad Gita, what was the conclusion for you? Someone says, I'm God. Then I ask another one, what did you get out of Bhagavad Gita? He says, we're all God. So one says he was God. This one says, we're all God. Then we ask another one. He says, there is no God. So what is going on? This is confusion. Then I asked one, and he jokingly, I must admit, he jokingly said, I asked him, so what did you get? What was the message you got out of Bhagavad Gita? He said, the message I got out of Bhagavad Gita is, my mother-in-law is God. Now, of course, there may be some truth in that. At least in a diplomatic sense. But anyway, my point is, there is a lot of confusion. But here, in this verse, Lord Krishna is speaking very clearly. Mata parataram na anyat. Mata means than me. Parataram means greater. Parataram is comparative sense. Greater than me. Mata parataram. Or literally, than me, greater. Na. Anyat. Na, of course, means not. And anyat means other. There is no other greater than me, Krishna says. Everything is resting on me. Sutre mani gana iva. Sutra. You've all heard of Mangal Sutra, which the ladies wear at their weddings. Sutra means necklace, basically. Sutre mani. Mani means jewels. So Krishna said, there is no truth superior to me. Everything is resting on me, like pearls or jewels strung on a thread. Now, of course, we are familiar with necklaces, some beads or some pearls or some whatever it may be, is there on the necklace. But the necklace, when you look at the necklace, generally, like I have on my neck here, my tulsi beads, tulsi mala, countryman for the nick. Little bees. Now, of course, we all know that these bees are not just hanging here somehow. They're hanging on a thread. So Krishna says, everything is resting on me, just like these bees are resting on the thread. But the problem is that we can see the beads, we can see the necklace, but we cannot see the thread. This is the problem. Krishna, God, is supporting everything. But we see everything, we do not see Him supporting it. And therefore, very foolishly, we think there is nothing supporting it. It is supporting itself. It is like thinking these beads are just supporting themselves. Or your necklace, if you have a necklace on. It's just that the beads are supporting themselves. And obviously, you would be very foolish to think that. It's like childish, really, to think that a necklace is there. There is no thread holding it together. Of course, we see the necklace, we don't see the thread. So, in this world, we see the world, but we do not see that Krishna, God, is holding it together. We just see everything on the surface. We just see the world. And we think it's all just going on. By chance, somehow by accident. But this is also another not very good idea. The theory of evolution, random chance, some sort of random selection. It's also not a very good idea. You know, Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, he did not appreciate Darwin and his philosophy of evolution of the species very much. Prabhupada thought it was quite stupid that your grandfather was a chimpanzee. Bunda. See, I spent quite a bit of time in India, so we pick up a little Hindi along the way. So, yes, your grandfather was a chimpanzee. What do you think? Prabhupada said that this theory is so stupid. We are humans. We produce humans. The chimpanzees produce chimpanzees. Prabhupada said that I think this theory of Darwin is very stupid. He said, Darwin said that his grandfather was a chimpanzee. And Srila Prabhupada commented that, when I hear this theory, it sounds so stupid that I think maybe Darwin's grandfather was a chimpanzee. Anyway, you know, we don't want to become abusive or aggressive too much about these things. But just as a historical point, the theory of evolution as presented by Darwin in 1859, Origin of the Species was the name of his book. It has been totally rejected by the scientific community. Totally rejected. And now there are many different other ideas about evolution. So anyway, the thing is that, like we mentioned, during that Ram Rajya, the rule of Lord Ram, that everyone was happy. And there was no anxiety, no stress, and no lamentation, no ignorance. People were completely happy. Perhaps we have not experienced that even once. Completely happy. Because because they were focused on the Lord. And the Lord was giving His mercy. So what about now? What about now in this Kali Yuga, when everything is so disturbed in so many ways, as we all know, and we've already mentioned a few little points. So, what to do? Is there anything we can do? Or is there nothing we can do? We are just victims of the circumstances. No. No. We can adapt our lives and ourselves also to God consciousness, and this way focus our lives and our minds and our activities on Krishna, on Lord Ram, and get His mercy, because He is still present, although you need spiritual eyes to see Him, and those we don't have. But He is not limited. We are limited. We cannot see Him at this point, but He can see us. He is not limited. So He is there also to give His mercy. If we focus on Him and surrender to Him and serve Him in the same way that the inhabitants of Ayodhya did when Lord Ram was present many years ago, or the associates of Lord Krishna did when He was present, we can also experience the same thing. It is not so difficult. We just need to adopt the same program of activity, focusing our lives, focusing our activities. For example, your work. Most of you here, I assume, are working people, and maybe some housewives. But that's also work. So everyone has some occupational duty. Every day you get up and you know you have to do something. It's not like you get up and, you know, what on earth is going to happen today. You know. Off to work you go. So, Arjuna, here, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is speaking with Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was a warrior, soldier, professional. That was his life. He knew nothing else from childhood, actually. He was trained in that from a young boy. So, he was a warrior. In Bhagavad Gita, the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is telling Lord Krishna, I don't want to fight, and giving all sorts of reasons. But the bottom line was, he didn't want to do his duty of fighting. And in Bhagavad Gita, what does Lord Krishna do? Lord Krishna convinces him, you must fight. In so many ways, Krishna argues back and forth. And he convinces Arjuna. And in the end, Lord Krishna asks Arjuna, right in the last few verses, he said, so what are you going to do? What do you think? What is your conclusion now? And Arjuna picked up his weapons and went into battle. So Krishna convinced him. So, it is not, in saying that, Bhagavad Gita is not a book which is just promoting violence. I don't know if any of you have had the honor of being in the army, but some of our devotees, not so much here, but in Russia, some of our devotees, they used to have conscription up until a few years ago, and they used to have to go and fight. So some of our devotees were telling us that they had to go into fight. But some of these young boys, they just pick picked up off the streets or out of the factories somewhere, they don't want to fight. And the sergeant and the other officers, they're trying to get them to fight and convince them and scream at them and force them to fight, which is not very nice. And here, Krishna is telling Arjuna, you should fight. But the point is not the fighting. The point is that one must do one's duty. Like maybe, if you're a housewife, then, of course, it's not 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, is it? It's kind of 24/7, if you're a housewife. And you can't just tell the children, particularly if you've got little children, you can't just tell them, nah, I'm going on holiday, see you later. You've got to be there. Even when you are on holiday, you've got to be there. So, maybe the housewife, like Arjuna, was thinking, why should I fight? It was his natural duty. He was a warrior. He was that type of person. Big, powerful person. Trained for that. But he didn't want to fight. So you may be housewife, and you may be fed up. What do? They leave their clothes lying around. I have to pick them up. What do? They all want to eat. The cook? No. Help? No. Clean the dish, wash the dishes afterwards? Forget it. It's all me, the housewife. I know. These things happen sometimes. And so just like Arjuna became frustrated, I don't want to fight, I don't want to do it, I've done enough. So you may also feel that I've had enough, let them make their own beds. Why me? Why are they always too busy but me? I'm expected to do it. So the housewife, just like Arjuna, was thinking, I will not do it. So the housewife might think, I will also not do it. It's a question of principle, of duty in Bhagavad Gita, not a specific activity that is applicable in individual terms. Yes, so we have to do our duty. You may be a businessman. One of our, well, not just one, but a few of our devotees, businessmen, they're Hare Krishna devotees, but they're business people. They've come to me over the years and said to me, you know, I'm tired of doing business. Because when I do business, sometimes I have to lie. Sometimes I have to lie. Sometimes I have to bluff the tax man. None of you would do that, would you? Sometimes we have to bluff the taxman. Poor Mr. Manuel is missing out. Otherwise, how will we make a profit? Even Srila Prabhupada said, that in India, the Muslims, you may know, the more strict Muslim men, they don't have moustaches. You've noticed that, I suppose. They may have a beard, but they won't have a moustache if they're Muslims, if they're strict. But the Hindus, they, in so many cases, at least in India, if you go to India, you see it. It's very, very common. The men, Hindu men, they have moustaches. And the businessmen, Prabhupada, like the shopkeepers, Prabhupada said, they tend to have moustaches. And Prabhupada once raised the question, why do the Hindu businessmen have moustaches in India? And Srila Prabhupada's answer, jokingly, don't think, you know, we're necessarily being serious. But Prabhupada said, jokingly, the reason they have mustaches is so you will not see them smiling when they tell you, for you I'm making no profit. Of course he's making a profit. Otherwise he would be bankrupt. Or worse. Anyway, that's another thing. But the point is one of duty. We should do our duties. As Arjuna did, he did his duty fighting as a service to Krishna. And Krishna was very merciful. Arjuna's mother, her name was Kunti. She was doing her duty as a mother. And Krishna was being merciful. Actually, just before the great battle of Kurukshetra, Bhagavad Gita is spoken just immediately before, like the same day, but just before they start fighting. So just before, like a day or two before, Kunti, the mother of Arjuna, and Arjuna also had four brothers. They're called the Pandava brothers. So Kunti, the mother, approached Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and she prayed, "My Lord, please, please grant me one wish, that in this great battle which is just about to happen, please make sure that my five sons, Arjuna and his brothers, please make sure they survive, that they're not killed." And Krishna said, "Certainly, I'll do that." And as things worked out, this is what happened. They survived the battle. Even though less than 1% of the warriors survived, but they survived. A fraction of 1%, actually. So after the battle then, Kunti approached Krishna and thanked him and noted that you fulfilled your promise. You said you would protect them, and you did. And she said, you are very reliable, Krishna. You don't say one thing and do another. And she said, she put it in a very nice way. She said, one day, snow may become hot, and fire may become cold, but I know your word will never change. This is Krishna, like Lord Ram said. Lord Ram is famous for Eka Patni Vrata. Even though there was a practice in those days of men or some men, particularly the warriors, having more than one wife. But he took Eka Patni Vrata, a vow, only one wife. So, Lord Ram was asked, anyway, the subject came up. He said, "For me, one wife, when I have to say something on any subject, one word. And if I'm confronted by an enemy, then one arrow." So, the Lord is dependable. So if we follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, if we follow in the footsteps of Hanuman, who is the great devotee of Lord Ram, then if we focus our minds like that, like the inhabitants of Ayodhya under the rule of Lord Ram, if we focus our minds, focus our lives, perform our duties for the pleasure of the Lord, He will give his mercy. And even though South Africa may go upside down at sort of halfway there or 25% of the way there or whatever, even if it goes completely upside down, but if we are fixed in God consciousness, fixed in Krishna consciousness, we will be able to pass through all of that without becoming bewildered and just losing it. And we will get the mercy of the Lord. In this way, we can be happy. And we see those, I know many of you are already practicing Krishna consciousness, but some of you, I think, may not be so much. But you may also have seen, because perhaps some of your relatives and friends are practicing Krishna consciousness. But the thing is, my point here is that even though the world, you know, whatever may happen, it may turn upside down, but if you, as an individual, if you remain Krishna conscious, God conscious, then you will be unaffected by the turbulence of this world. Rather, you will always be happy despite what is going on around you. If your family is Krishna conscious, your whole family will be like that. And if the whole world becomes Krishna conscious, the whole world can change. Otherwise, ANC, National Party, Communists, Republicans, Democrats, British Conservative Party, Labour Party. Well, anyway, what can we say? So far it hasn't worked very well. But if we're fixed in the service of the Lord, fixed in God consciousness, then we'll be very happy. And we see, we have devotees in communist countries like China. We have devotees in very, like Singapore, which is sort of semi-fascist, and other all sorts of socialist and different degrees, different types of democratic situations. We have devotees in virtually every country in the world seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. They're all very happy. And even in Zimbabwe, of all places, we have devotees there, Hare Krishna devotees, and they're doing very nicely in Krishna consciousness. So today, let me just conclude by saying that today we're having this program on the request of Her Grace Vraja Devi Dasi, who is, I think, known to all of you. Some of you may know her by a different name, but that's okay. We call her Vraja Devi Dasi. Vraja means Vrindavan, the holy place of Lord Krishna. You may know her by some other name, but that's alright. You know what Shakespeare said, right? A rose by any name would smell as sweet. So she's very nice devotee. She has invited you all here today. She has invited us all here today. We're here participating in the program on her request. I think many of you are her relatives or friends, connections in one way or another. And I'm sure she's very happy to see you all here. But she'd be very happy if you take it home with you. Don't just walk home or drive home and sit down in front of the TV and put on the latest Bollywood DVD. What's it? Om Shanti Om. I was just in Mauritius about 10 days ago, and we were in one place and they were playing that song, the theme song. Om Shanti Om, my Lord. You know, this is meant to be something sacred, but it has been brought down to the level of like some silly pop thing. So don't just go home and put on, what is it, the other one? Ajanachana. Mala. Mala. Ah. Sub mala. Madhuri Dixit. You know, don't. If we continue to do the same things, we should not expect that our lives will change. Does that make sense? If we continue doing the same things, how do we expect that our lives will change? They will not change, obviously. So let us change a little. Let us add Krishna consciousness. Let us add studying the Bhagavad Gita, associating with the devotees, chanting the holy names, taking prasad. Let us add these things. And then just as those of us, including Rajadevi, have found, who have already done that, and just as we've found our lives have improved, everything has become very wonderful, same thing will happen to you. Guaranteed. So thank you very much. Thank you all very much for listening very patiently. And now we will conclude the program. Well, to conclude, we will have prasad in a few minutes, but last item otherwise on the program, we will have Guru Puja, as our MC announced. We do place emphasis on respecting the Guru, the spiritual master, spiritual teacher, because we are born in ignorance, but he has helped us. He has opened our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, so we don't overlook that. So we'll conclude the program by having Guru Puja, worship of the spiritual master. The picture of Srila Prabhupada will come in. In fact, it can come in. You there holding the picture. And we will all stand up again. Let us all stand up. Take part in the kirtan. Are we going to